1 Kings chapter 21. I've entitled the message tonight, Benefits of Humility. And no one has ever been born humble other than Jesus Christ. We're not born humble. That's just another way we are. We've got a sinful nature. Our sin natures lean toward pride and selfishness, and make humility one of the most difficult virtues to develop. Really is. Because, I mean, the more we work at it, the more we fail. All right. I'm going to try really hard to be humble today, and then I'm not humble at all, you know. But it is a difficult thing. Humility does not just happen. That's an important one for us to remember, too. Humility doesn't just happen. It is very beneficial. And God wants us to be humble. You know, when facing God's judgment, wicked King Ahab humbled himself, and even he experienced the benefits of humility. Here in 1 Kings chapter 21, I want to begin reading with verse number 17 and read down through the end. Begin with verse 17. And the word of the Lord came to Elijah the Tishbite, saying, "Arise, go down to meet Ahab, king of Israel, which is in Samaria. Behold, he is in the vineyard of Naboth, whether he has gone down to possess it." Now, let me just back up. If you're not familiar with the story, you can't remember. Remember, Naboth had a vineyard, and Ahab said, "I want your vineyard." And he said, I'm sorry, I can't sell it because it's part of my inheritance, and it's a law of Israel. You can't sell your inheritance. And King Ahab went home pouting and went to bed, refused to eat, was a big spoiled brat, and went to bed and pouted. And Mama Jezebel comes along. "What's wrong, sweetie? I want that vineyard, they won't give it to me." She says, "You're the king, aren't you? Go get it." "Well, yeah, but it's against the law. I can't do it." She says, did she care about God's law? Absolutely not. She says, "Don't worry, sweetie. I'll get you the vineyard." And so she goes out, tells a bunch of lies, has other people tell a bunch of lies, claim that Naboth was blaspheming God and the king, and they took out Naboth and stoned him to death. And once he was dead, then she says, "Sweetheart, the vineyard's yours now. Go get it." Naboth's dead. And that's where we're at in our story. Okay? Verse 19. "And thou shalt speak unto him, saying, Thus saith the Lord, hast thou killed and also taken possession? And thou shalt speak unto him, saying, Thus saith the Lord, in the place where the dogs licked the blood of Naboth, shall dogs lick thy blood, even thine. And Ahab said unto Elijah, Hast thou found me, O mine enemy? And he answered, I have found thee, because thou hast sold thyself to work evil in the sight of the Lord. Behold, I bring evil upon thee, and will take away thy posterity, and will cut off from Ahab all that pisseth against the wall, and him that is shut up and left in Israel, and will make thine house like the house of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, and like the house of Baasha, the son of Ahijah, for the provocation wherewith thou hast provoked me to anger and made Israel to sin. And for of Jezebel also spake the Lord, saying, The dogs shall eat Jezebel by the wall of Jezreel. Him that dieth of Ahab in the city, the dogs shall eat, and him that dieth in the field shall the fowls of the air eat. But there was none like unto Ahab, which did sell himself to work wickedness in the sight of the Lord, whom Jezebel his wife stirred up." What a wonderful wife he had. Okay? "And he did very abominably in following idols according to all things as did the Amorites," the enemies, "among whom the Lord cast out before the children of Israel. And it came to pass when Ahab heard those words that he rent his clothes and put sackcloth on his flesh and fasted and lay in sackcloth and went softly. And the word of the Lord came to Elijah the Tishbite, saying, Seest thou how Ahab humbleth himself before me? Because he humbled himself before me, I will not bring the evil in his days, but in his son's days will I bring the evil upon his house." Amazing story. Amazing. Here's a man who was absolutely godless. He wanted nothing to do with God. And yet God had mercy upon him because he humbled himself. Now, if God will have mercy upon wicked, rotten King Ahab because he humbled himself, how much more will he do that if we will live humble lives? And so there's some things here I want us to notice, some benefits that I believe that we can gain by being humble. And the first benefit I note here is that humility always replaces pride. Humility always replaces pride. Humility and pride are opposites, and they can't exist together. A person cannot be humble and proud at the same time. It is not possible. They're opposites. And so with that in mind, pride is self-centeredness. We see a lot of that in our lives. Me first. And our world is, that's what's all about in our world. You know, take care of yourself. Step on whoever you got to step on, but you got to take care of yourself in this world or else you'll get run over. And that's the philosophy of our world. That is a selfish, pride-filled, godless philosophy. And Ahab was just that. He was self-centered, not God-centered. Now, Ahab wanted Naboth's vineyard. He knew the law. He knew what God's law said. He knew that God's law said that once you've inherited, they established this way back in the time of Joshua, where when you inherit a land, that is yours forever, and it can never leave your family, it can never leave your tribe, because it is your inheritance. And that was one of the laws that God had laid down. And Ahab knew that. He was not ignorant of that law. And Ahab then, when he couldn't get his own way, he selfishly pouted because he couldn't get his way. You know, kids, this is something for all of us to learn, but it's not just kids that pout. All right, Ahab wasn't a little kid. He was a grown adult. And he didn't get what he wanted, so he went home, pouted. I'm not going to eat. I'm upset. I'm feeling miserable. I don't want to eat. Leave me alone. Just go away. And he was pouting. All right? And Ahab let Jezebel plot to kill Naboth. Now, Ahab knew what was going on. Jezebel said, I'll take care of it. Just give me a ring. We'll sign this papers and it'll all be okay. We'll take care of this guy, Naboth. And he let her do it. You know, did you notice what I emphasized there in verse 25? That Jezebel, his wife, stirred him up. Who was this Jezebel? What do we know about this wicked woman, Jezebel? Well, Jezebel was, first of all, a Gentile. She was not a Jew. She was a pagan. She was the daughter of a wicked man, I believe a king, if I'm not mistaken, in Phoenicia, up near Tyre and Sidon. She was wicked. She was a Baal worshiper. And it was her goal and passion to stamp out Jehovah worship and install Baal worship in Israel. She did a mighty good job of it. And she was there to stir up Ahab. Ahab had a lot of bad tendencies himself. Ahab was the son of a wicked man, Omri. You read about Omri, and God says there was nobody as wicked as Omri was. And then you get to Ahab's life, and it says, no, there was nobody as wicked as Ahab was. So he learned well from his dad. And he got worse than his dad. You know, that's one thing for us fathers to keep in mind. It's an awesome thing to raise children. And it's frustrating when we see our bad traits come out in their lives. That's frustrating. And yet that's what happened here with Ahab. He learned from Omri. And now Ahab's wicked. And he's destroying the nation and leading them astray. And prior to this, what happened back in chapter 17? Chapter 17 is when Elijah first showed his face in front of Ahab and said, Ahab, it's not going to be rain or dew until I say so. Because of your sin. 3.5 years they had no rain. Drought was terrible. The nation was crumbling because of the drought. Then Elijah comes back on the scene and he presents this challenge. He says, I'm going to show you who the real God is. Let's all meet up on Mount Carmel. And they got up on Mount Carmel and they had the big showdown there. And all the prophets of Baal, they made their altar and they're calling down fire from heaven from their god Baal. And they cut themselves with knives, and they danced, and they hooted, and hollered, and sang, and cried, and all kinds of things all day long until the evening sacrifice got nothing. Then Elijah said, all right, now step aside, it's my turn. He rebuilt the altar of God, placed the wood and the meat on the altar, poured 12 barrels of water on top of it to make sure it was good and wet, and he prayed one little sentence prayer. Just like that, God sent down fire from heaven and burned it all up. Not just the wood, but the stones, everything licked up the water. There was nothing but a hole in the ground when it was done. Now Ahab saw that. It hadn't been that many years before that. Ahab knew. Ahab saw that God was the powerful God and Baal was nothing. But he hadn't changed his ways. He hadn't learned his lesson. Now he's out and he kills Naboth, takes his vineyard, and now God pronounces a judgment against him. Ahab was selfish. He had never considered the feelings of Naboth. What about Naboth? He wanted his vineyard, but Naboth said, I'm sorry, I can't, king, because it's my inheritance. Didn't matter to him. I want that vineyard. It's right when I want it. And he didn't consider God's will. He was a bully, a selfish bully. He didn't say, well, what does God want in this? What's God's thoughts? And you know, when we go through life, one of the best things we can ask ourselves is, what is God's will in this? You know, I want to get this, or I want to buy that, or I want to go there. What is God's will? You know, we need to stop long enough to ask that question. That is critical. What is God's will? You know, before you go do something, make sure you're doing what God wants, not what you want or what I want. We need to make sure that we're obeying God. Psalm 10, verse 4 says, the wicked, through the pride of his countenance, will not seek after God. God is not in all his thoughts. See, wicked people don't have any desire to please God and follow God. Charles Buck, in his theological dictionary, define pride like this, and it's an excellent definition. And I'll try to read it carefully and slowly so you can hear it. Pride is unreasonable self-esteem attended with disrespect and rude treatment of others. The proud man is naturally wrapped up in his own importance, often speaks to his audience with their speaks to his audience to make them feel inferior. Pride manifests itself by praising ourselves, adorning ourselves, attempting to appear before others to be superior. Pride is a terrible thing. We struggle with pride. And we display our pride when we draw attention to ourselves. You know, young people, it's one of the things we've tried to work on some of the youth activities, and that to be careful not to gloat over our successes. Now, we can get excited. I mean, I've played sports as a kid. You know, when I played baseball was our game, you know, and when I'd hit a home run, you know, you couldn't help but just say, oh, I got a home run. That was awesome. But at the same time, to go around like a lot of the professional sports heroes and, you know, look at me, look what I just did. That's taking all the glory. And that's pride. And God says, hang on now. I gave you the ability to do that. I gave you the strength to do that. I gave you the wisdom to do that. And you need to give me the glory for what I've given you instead of praising ourselves. And so we need to be real careful about that. The main consequence of pride is God's resistance. God's resistance. God had tolerated Ahab's wickedness for years, but his prideful disregard for Naboth and God's laws was the last straw. God says, that's enough. Not going to put up with it any longer. And God sent Elijah to drop the prophetic bomb on Ahab. And Ahab, what did he say? Ahab, you're going to die, and the dogs are going to lick your blood right where you killed Naboth. And he said, not only that, but your family's going to die. All the members of your family are going to die. And those that die in the city, the dogs are going to eat them. And those that die out in the field, the birds are going to eat them. Now that is the most despicable thing that a Jewish person could ever think of. I mean, for us, that's pretty low down too. I mean, we wouldn't, you know, if you died, I really don't care, to be honest with you. If I die and the dogs eat me, that's fine. And, you know, just save the burial fees. All right. But it doesn't really matter. I'm gone. But it's not the kind of thing that a person really looks, you know, and thinks, oh, that's a nice way to end things. Especially for a Jew. The dogs were disgusting. The birds were disgusting. And to have the vultures and the dogs eat you would be the worst possible end of your life. And he said, that's what's going to happen to your family. All of your family members, your children, all of your family members are going to die that way. And he said, not only that, but Jezebel, that wicked old Jezebel, she's going to die and the dogs are going to eat her in Jezreel. And you can read that story later on. I asked Melody if she teaches that in Sunday school. She says, no, I skipped that story. But what a story. They throw Jezebel out the upper story window of the palace. She splats on the ground and they run over her with the chariots and the horses and the dogs come and eat her. Just like God said. God said it would happen. Why? Because they had proudly disgraced God and refused to humble before God. And he said that's what's going to happen. James chapter 4 and verse number 6 says, He giveth more grace, wherefore he saith, God resisteth the proud and giveth grace to the humble. Resist the proud. I don't want God resisting me. I got enough problems in life without God resisting me. And you do too. We don't want God working against us. That's the last thing we want. We want God for us, not against us. But God says, if we're proud, I will work against you. Several other results. Many verses in the Bible deal with this, but here's a few key ones. Proverbs 11:2. When pride cometh, then cometh shame. And with the lowly is wisdom. Proverbs 16:5. Every one that is proud in his heart is an abomination to the Lord. Though hand joined in hand, he shall not be unpunished. Proverbs 16:18, pride goeth before destruction and a haughty spirit before fall. Daniel 4:37, Nebuchadnezzar, if there's ever a man that describes for us the importance of humility, Nebuchadnezzar's the man. Here is the king of the world at that time. He was the king of the world. Everything was under him. And God told him, Nebuchadnezzar, you better humble yourself or I'm going to cut your tree down. And you're going to roam like an oxen for 7 years. Insane. If you don't humble yourself, he wouldn't listen. God did just that. For 7 years, he was insane. Finally, at the end of 7 years, he humbled himself before God. I don't know how an insane man did that, but he did. And he writes these words. This is what he says. And now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth, and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride, he is able to abase. That's King Nebuchadnezzar saying that. Amazing. He turned to God in humility. He learned his lesson. And what a lesson for us. And Elijah was pronouncing this judgment upon Ahab, and Ahab was listening, and we need to listen as well. When humility exists, it always replaces pride. They can't exist together. They can't. Now, the second benefit we can find here is that humility always changes one's conduct. It always changes the conduct. Humility begins by changing the heart. Now, God doesn't tell us a whole lot about Ahab's heart here. Just all of a sudden, it flips over in verse 27, sorry. And he has a change in his outside. But it always begins in the heart. It begins down inside. And it begins as he, you know, in our lives, it's like we've got in our heart here. We can put self in our heart, and a lot of times it's God's out here. When we're proud, that's the way it is. Self is on the throne of our heart. God is left outside. But when we humble ourselves, it turns around, and then we put God on the inside, and self is on the outside. We let God take control. Let him sit on the throne of our heart. And that is exactly what was needed here. And he was And we see that when God begins a work in his heart and he convicts him and he sees the problem, that Ahab changed. As I said, God doesn't tell us about his verbal confession, but we see the outward change that had to have begun on the inside. And so then we find also that humility produces that outward change in our actions. And Ahab's actions, notice what he did. He rent his clothes. That doesn't mean he rented them out. It means he tore them. Okay? He cut them or ripped them. All right? And so he rent his clothes. Why would he do that? A sign of grief. Something very, very bad happens. If someone in the family died or there's some very great tragedy, they would take their clothes and tear their clothes as a sign of grief. Ahab did that. He put on sackcloth on his flesh. Now, sackcloth is the cloth that they made sacks out of, or tents. It was typically made of goat's hair, black goat's hair, and it was rough and coarse. It'd be a miserable thing to try to wear. It'd be just very coarse and itchy and scratchy. But they would put that on as a sign of mourning. When a person was grieving or mourning, they would put sackcloth on. They'd take the regular clothes off, put sackcloth on, and they'd sit in with this sackcloth wrapped around them as a sign of mourning. I'm miserable. I'm itchy. And everybody could see them. Poor guy, look at them. They're just, ooh, that looks terribly uncomfortable. But they were mourning and showing that as a sign. And Ahab did that. Then he fasted. He went without food. Just said, I'm not going to eat. This time he wasn't pouting. This time he was genuine, he was broken, and he was fasting, a willingness to do without his food is a sign of grief. He lay in sackcloth. When he went to bed at night, instead of using his nice soft bed and his nice soft pillows, he got the sackcloth, and he laid that on his bed, and he laid there in sackcloth. What a miserable night of sleep. Every time you move, it's itchy, itchy, scratchy, scratchy, and oh, where's my comfortable pillow? And this is, ooh. But he did that as a sign of mourning and grief. And then it says that he went softly. There's a couple of ideas of what that means. It may mean that he went barefoot. That's one idea. Nobody knows for positive. But for the king to go barefoot, you know, he's probably a tenderfoot like me. You know, I almost never go barefoot. I always wear my shoes. So if I ever take my shoes off, and I'm walking on the stones, and everybody else walking right along, and I'm a tenderfoot. All right, because I always wear my shoes. And that's the way a king would have been. So it could be that by going barefoot would be walking softly and, you know, not making any noise. That's one idea. The other idea is may be more of the idea of his actions and attitudes would be calm in fear of God's anger. Like, all right, I've got to be very careful that I don't upset God. I'm sorry, God. I'm just going softly with his attitude and his actions. That's a possibility, too. So either way, maybe both. But Ahab went softly. Now, like I like what Charles Buck again describes, how he describes humility. He gave us a great definition of pride. He gives an excellent rendition of humility. I'll read it slowly. You listen carefully. It really does meet the need. He said, humility consists in not attributing to ourselves any excellence or good which we have not. Number two, it consists in not overrating anything we do. Thirdly, it consists in not taking an immoderate delight in ourselves. Number four, it consists in not assuming more of the praise of a quality or action than belongs to us. It consists in an inward sense of many imperfections and sins. It consists in ascribing all we have and are to the grace of God. And lastly, a humble person will have a modest appearance, a modest pursuit, a modest way of life, and a modest behavior. A good definition of humility. Something we need to strive for. something I need to strive for. All of us struggle with this. A humble person will see himself as God sees him. You know, when we stop and think about that, what does God see in me? When I do the very best thing that I have done, I have succeeded. And people say, oh, look at him, look at great A, that's wonderful. What does God see in me? What does God see? Is God seeing me humble before him and saying, God be the glory, to God be the glory, I didn't do it. It's not me. I can't do it. Anything that I have came from him. It's of his grace. It's not me. I can't do it. Or do we say, yep, that's me. I've climbed the ladder. I'm doing good. Boy, I've succeeded. That's the pride answer. But when we come and we say, God, it's all you. It's all you, God. I don't deserve any of the praise. And we've got to seek that from our heart and see that and understand that. Jeremiah addressed this with Israel in Jeremiah 9, 23 and 24. Two good verses to memorize. A little bit long, but they're good verses. He said there, thus saith the Lord, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, neither let the mighty man glory in his might, neither let the rich man glory in his riches, but let him that glories glory in this, that he understandeth and knoweth me, that I am the Lord, which exercise loving kindness, judgment, and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I delight, saith the Lord. God says, don't glory in what you have. Glory in me. Glory in the fact that you know him. And that's what we really need to focus on. When we start patting ourselves on the back and saying, aren't I great? We need to say, wait a minute. God is great, not me. Look what God did. Look at the salvation he's provided for me. Look what he's paid for so I can go to heaven. Look at all the goodness he's done to me. Look at all the blessings he's brought into my life. Look at all the things that he's helped me through. God is great. We need to give him the glory and the praise and the honor instead of ourselves. We find certainly another benefit, that humility always pleases God. God may withhold judgment. We see that in Ahab's situation. Ahab was wicked. He had not done anything that was God-fearing and God-honoring. He had led the nation astray, led them into Baal worship, turned them away from God, angered God, and the nation never really recovered from that. And he hadn't changed after the drought and the fire from heaven. He was wicked. And yet, the heart of God was touched by his humility. It's amazing. There's one other example that I know of in the Bible that is like that. There was a time when, as far as I can discern, the very worst king that ever reigned in Israel, northern or southern kingdom, was King Manasseh. King Manasseh was absolutely rotten. And during his reign, God sent him to Babylon. Not the Babylonian captivity, but him personally. The Babylonians came, captured him, took him to Babylon. And in prison in Babylon, he humbled himself before God. And God let him go. And let him come back to Israel. And let him take his throne again. Absolutely amazing. Why would God have mercy on a man who was absolutely that rotten? And because of his wickedness, the nation never recovered. And they had some revivals after that. But because of his wickedness, the people deep down in their hearts, even during the revivals were only superficial. The king could say, we're going to honor God. We're going to worship God. And the people would kind of do that on the outside, but deep down inside, they're still rotten inside. They're still worshiping their idols. They were worshiping the sun and the moon and the stars. They were worshiping the false gods. They were worshiping Baal. They were worshiping Astaroth. They were worshiping all kinds of things. And they turned against God. But God had mercy upon him. And the fact here that God had mercy upon Ahab when he humbled himself is absolutely amazing. It really is. It's awesome. Ahab's humility was sincere. You know, some people say, well, I don't think Ahab was really very sincere because he really didn't change much. Well, the only thing I can say to that is God said that he was sincere. God said, because Ahab humbled himself, I'm going to be merciful to him. So God said he was humble. So I guess he was humble. He had humbled himself genuinely before God. And those who truly humble themselves before God can one day expect God to take notice. God says he will. And while pride robs God of his rightful glory, humility gives God the glory he deserves as our creator, sustainer, and our sovereign. So pride is a type of thievery. It's robbing from God. God deserves the glory, and we take it from him and say, "This, look what I did." God says, hang on, you didn't do any of that. I gave you all that ability. It was me. But we give it to ourselves instead of to God. But when we humble ourselves and we give God the credit and we give him all the glory for being our creator, sustainer, and our sovereign, God is praised. And God will exalt those that humble themselves. God may lift us up. Says he will. If we humble ourselves, he'll lift us up in one way or another. We find the story that Jesus told of the publican and the Pharisee over in the book of Luke chapter 18. I'm not going to read the whole story, but think about a portion of it. There in Luke chapter 18, the Pharisee came and was praying in the temple. And he was standing there, lifting his hands up to God and said, oh God, aren't you, I'm paraphrasing it now, okay? Aren't you blessed to have a great guy like me? I tithe. I'm wonderful. I help all the people. I'm just a great guy. It's wonderful. And I'm not like this publican over here. This tax collector. Not like him. I'm a great guy, God. And then the publican says, the publican standing afar off would not lift up so much of his eyes unto heaven, but smote upon his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. And Jesus said, I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone that exalted himself shall be abased, and he that humbles himself shall be exalted. And God is telling us the key. We need to humble ourselves. James 4:10, humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. Proverbs 29:23, a man's pride shall bring him low, but honor shall uphold the humble in spirit. Proverbs 11:2, when pride cometh, then cometh shame, but with the lowly is wisdom. Ahab did not humble himself until he was threatened by God. But he did humble himself. That was a good time to humble himself. But you know, there's a better time to humble ourselves before we're threatened by God. If we'll humble ourselves on a daily basis and honor God and give him the glory, God will lift us up and honor us. Oh, we may be nobodies in this world. This world may look at us and think, who's he? Who's she? You know, they mention the names, never heard of them. There are certain names, you can mention names that people, everybody knows. Everyone in the whole world has heard of their name. But they may never know your name or my name. We're nobodies. But still in our own hearts, we got that wicked tendency to think, even though I might be a nobody, I'm still pretty good. And we like to lift ourselves up. And God says, no, you lift up me. Give me the glory. And I'll take care of lifting up you. We talked about that this morning, the judgment seat of Christ. You know, there's a lot of what God will do will be at the judgment seat of Christ. We may go through this life as a nobody, but we may be lifted up on that day. God may say, I will honor you now for what you've done. You've given me the glory. And folks, that's what we ought to strive for. That's something all of us can strive for. It's not just for me. I've got to work at it. No question about it. I struggle with pride just like all of us do. And I've got to work at it. But it isn't just me that has to work at it. All of us do. And if we'll do that, God says if we'll do that, He will lift us up. And we need to let Him take and do that in His good time if we give Him the glory. Humility is having a right view of God's sovereignty and seeing ourselves as God sees us. Nothing more and nothing less. How does God see me? How does God see you? As you look in God's mirror and God sees you, you look at it and ask yourself, what does God see in me? And God's not saying we need to be always putting ourselves down and, you know, smearing mud on our face and our name and I'm a nobody, I'm worthless, I'm just a scum. No, we're a child of God. So we don't have to go around belittling ourselves, but at the same time, we need to give God all the glory for anything He does through us. Everything we do that succeeds or seems to be good, we need to give Him the glory and say, God did it. God did it. Not me. God did it. And if we'll do that, God says, I'll lift you up. That's something that all of us can do. From the youngest to the oldest, we can all seek to honor God with our life. Let's try to do that this week, okay?